Welcome to Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi.
And I'm Lisa. And today we're kicking off a three-part conversation that I think is going to hit a lot of you right where you live.
Yeah, it's a little mini-series, if you will, called Scene. 3 days, three angles, one story. By the end of part three, I think you're going to walk away with something that we can all use.
Okay, well, let's set it up then. What are we doing today?
We're going to look at the book of Ruth, chapter two. And I want to be upfront about something before we even get to the text. This episode is about being seen, not in the Instagram sense. I mean the deep, almost frightening question. What happens when someone sees the real you, not the curated version? You're a big curator, all right? No. And doesn't.
Oh, hey. Oh. Wait.
Well, what happens when someone sees the real you and not the curated version and doesn't walk away?
Okay, that's uncomfortably specific.
Oh, well, it's supposed to be. We want to be seen at work, I think, as capable. Don't you want to be seen capable?
Sure.
Do I answer if you are? Oh, I mean, sorry.
I think that's for a conversation on a different day, okay. Not with all the audience.
But we're kind of terrified. I remember being talking with another pastor buddy of mine, and I'm like, I am just wondering when they're going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing. Because I think that there is a curated version of all of us, but we're terrified people will notice how much we're improvising. We want our spouse to see how much we carry, but if we say it out loud, it's like complaining, and we don't like that, and we don't want them to think that we're complaining. We want our kids to see our sacrifice, but we're afraid they'll also see our impatience.
Well, yeah, and we want people at church to think we're faithful, but we're hiding our doubts and our dry prayers.
Right. We want the good version of us seen. Composed, useful, kind.
Like Thomas. Thomas the Train Engine is a very useful engine.
What? How did we get there?
I was just, you know, Thomas.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Back to serious things.
Yeah, we want the good version of us to be seen, even if you're Thomas of the Train. Thomas
well,
the Train.
Yes, you do.
And we're afraid that if people saw the whole version, they'd step back instead of stepping closer.
Right. So who's our character and who is living that exact fear in our story?
Her name is Ruth. Quick backstory for anyone just joining us. Naomi is an Israelite woman, lost her husband, both her sons while living in Moab. Her daughter-in-law, Ruth, a Moabite, a foreigner, not an Israelite, refuses to leave her side and comes back with her to Bethlehem, to Israel. Ruth has no husband because he died. No land, no status, no safety net. She's functionally invisible, the kind of person who could disappear in culture and nobody would even notice.
So she's got nothing to offer and actually really nothing to lose.
Well, maybe everything to lose.
How so?
Well, if you think about it, she has nothing. Like she could have went back to her mom and dad.
I suppose.
And she has like zero, like she might lose her life because it's not like there's. It's that easy to glean food and get food and shelter and all that stuff. And she's attached herself to a widow that doesn't have anything either.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose on the one hand, she has everything to lose. But on the other hand, she's at the absolute bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Well, there's lots to gain, perhaps.
Yeah. So what does she do? She goes out to glean, picking up leftover grain in someone else's field after the harvest has gone through. This is legal under Israelite law. But also kind of humiliating.
Humiliating?
There we go. Okay. I can't say that word. Because you're surviving in scraps. And the scripture says she just so happens to land in a field belonging to a man named Boaz.
Yeah, happened to. I think that phrase is doing some heavy lifting there.
Yeah, it is. From Ruth's side, it looks like dumb luck. From God's side, it's providence wearing a disguise. Hold on to that. We'll come back to it in part three. But here's where today's text picks up. Boaz comes out, sees the foreign woman in the field, and instead of looking past her, he speaks to her. Listen to this as you read it, Lisa.
Okay, this is Ruth chapter 2, verses 8 through 10. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner.
I like that first phrase. Now listen, my daughter. That's not like some weird language or like controlling language or even romantic language. And I think that's somehow times how people read that because of the end of the story. But in this moment, it's protective and it's really family language to call someone my daughter. It's dignifying language.
Yeah, he talks right to her. He doesn't talk about her. He talks to her.
Right. And that's, I think, kind of worth sitting. Boaz owns the field. Ruth is picking up the scraps. He's an Israelite with standing. She's a Moabite with none. Every social signal in that culture says he should look past her or even worse.
But yeah, that's not what he does, right?
No.
Right.
He doesn't. Instead, he sees her without really reducing her. That's the line I want us to think about. There's a kind of seeing that reduces people. I think we do it maybe all the time. We size someone up, judge a book by its cover, compare ourselves, categorize them, and move on. Boaz doesn't do that. He looks at Ruth and sees a person worth protecting.
Well, yeah, and it would have been so easy for him to do that too, right? Foreigner, stranger, in his field, getting the scraps, all those things. But it's almost like he saw her the way that God sees people.
Yeah, that's exactly the connection scripture, I think, the narrator wants to make. Go all the way back to Genesis, Adam and Eve, they sin. And the first thing they do, what do?
Hide, run and hide, cover up.
Oh. Why? Because they're afraid of being seen, really seen. They believe if God sees them, what is going to happen? He's going to condemn them.
Yeah, well, that's our instinct too, I think.
Do you think so?
Most of the time, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Most of us live that way every day, I guess. Yeah, we assume if people really knew us, they'd walk away. But what God does is in the garden, what does he do? He doesn't say distance. He comes looking. Where are you? Not because he lacks the information. He knows exactly where Adam is hiding. It's the question of pursuing mercy. He sees them in their shame, in their nakedness, and he moves toward them.
Well, yeah, and that pattern just keeps showing up. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is Hagar, right? He sees her out in the wilderness. She's the second wife of Abraham. And when she thinks her life is over, God meets her and he asks her a question too. Where are you going? God sees Israel under slavery. God sees David out in the field while his own family overlooks him. He sees Zacchaeus stuck in a tree. He sees the woman at the well every time, right? He comes to them with questions, engaging them. He sees them. He sees the woman bent over for 18 years that nobody else even notices.
And here in an ordinary barley field, Boaz becomes a small picture of that same kind of divine attention that I think we see throughout the scripture. He gives her protection. If you read that text, he gives her protection. He gives her permission. He gives her access to water already drawn. None of it's dramatic, just steady, practical kindness towards someone everyone else maybe would have or should have ignored.
Yeah, so here's a question that we might leave with people today. Where in your life are you assuming that if people really saw you, they'd step back? Is it in your work, in your marriage, with your kids, with God?
And here's the flip side of that. And I think it might be the harder one. Who is in your field today that you keep looking past? Who's easy for you to overlook because they're inconvenient or different or just not on your radar?
Yeah, because the kind of seeing that reduces people is everywhere, but the kind of seeing that restores people is rare and it costs something.
So takeaway for today, the way you are seen shapes whether you hide or whether you heal. Pay attention to whose eyes you're living for today, and ask God to make you the kind of person who sees others the way Boaz saw Ruth without reducing him.
Right, that's part one. Tomorrow, we're going to sit in the question Ruth actually asks out loud, because it's the same question that every one of us asks, whether we realize it or not.
Yeah. Why have I found favor in your eyes? That question is going to crack something open. And so we'll see you next time on Pearls and Swine. That is good news you can use.
Thanks for tuning in with us. If you've got questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You could email those to office@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or go to our website, evangelup.org.